Here we go. And Sadie, thank you so much, Sadie, for coming in here today. Mm-hmm. Maybe could you just give us your name and the social housing place that we are speaking about here today?
Okay. My name is Sadie Larkin. I am from Corporation Flats, and they would have been Meath Place. So we lived in Meath Place Flats, and we were just off Meath Street, and we pride ourselves saying we're from the Liberties. So that's a big deal in our area. So yes, that's where I'm actually from. It's from the Liberties area, and the flats there in Pimlico, the general area there would be Pimlico.
And could you describe, what did the flats look like?
Well, we moved from a very small little place that was over Massey's funeral home in Thomas Street, which was in bits at the time. And then when we moved into the flats there in Meath Place, when we moved in first, I thought it was the biggest place I'd ever seen in my life. It was just huge. And I thought, like, there was two bedrooms, whereas we just were all in one room beforehand. There was two bedrooms. So I actually wanted one as I thought my playroom. So that really changed. And I soon got sense. But yeah, so that was it. And my mother had Venetian blinds at the time. So that was very, you know, modern, and everyone thought was great. And apparently the architect came around all the different flats to see what way they had done it. So people had curtains and swags and tails. And she said, the architect, my mother's proud boast was that that's how I envisaged these places, with lots of light coming in. So Venetian blinds, I thought, I really have good taste, you know. So we did that, and it was, they were great. Now, there was a lot of us, like it was two bedrooms. So I was the eldest of six. So it was all the kids in one room. So we got the biggest room, which was out the back. And it was very cramped. And I'd like to say we didn't kill each other, but we absolutely did. But it was usually over clothes, makeup and cleansers. And I'd hate to say it, but underwear as well. And I know because I was working more than the rest of them, they used to all steal my makeup and they steal my clothes. And with the bedrooms as well, it's very hard to imagine, but there was like a small kitchenette. Like, it was tiny. It was a little galley kitchen. And when we do it, like, so you're cooking in there for eight people. I don't know how my mum managed. So if you came in even for a glass of water, you'd get the head bitten off you. And then sometimes I'd take a turn and I'd do a Sunday lunch, and they daren't even ask for the water because I was worse than my mother. I'd be killing everybody. So we have that. And then the bathroom was out in the hall. And, you know, you have images. I remember in the bathroom, it sounds very unhygienic, it actually is, but because you didn't have those big fridges or anything, so we get the turkey at Christmas time. My dad's job was to you know, pluck the turkey and take off all the, you know, they come lovely now, and you get them now and you buy them at Christmas and they're all done. But he used to cut off the claws, and he used to take all the giblets out. Oh God. But then he'd leave the head, but for a while before he did that, it would be left hanging in the bathroom, you know, for one of the rails that was there, and that's where the turkey. So going into the bathroom was like horrific. But anyway, that was a short space time. But he used to cut the claws off the turkeys, and he used to put it up in his jumper, and he used to run around the house with the claws, the turkey claws, running after us. And I just remember my mum saying, oh, and we all, you know, that giddy excitement of kids screaming and laughing and scared all at the same time. And my mum would used to, oh, this will all end up snots and tears. Stop it. Just stop it. So there was that. They were really small. But, I mean, I'm just thinking, when you come in from the hall, I was working in fashion for a while, so I had really nice clothes because I got them half price. But meant if I bought some of them, I couldn't go out for 3 weeks. You'd hang it up in the wardrobe and you'd be saying, any day soon. But then I'd be sitting there and you'd watch the TV, and then somebody would come in from the hall and they'd have to go through the sitting room to get into our bedroom. And if they had the coats buttoned right up to the top and down to the end, I bloody well knew what they'd done. So then I'd be going, what's she wearing? Is she wearing one of my clothes? They'd have that thing that you haven't even worn out. So I'd run in and my mother would be going, oh, no, Jesus, no. And she'd have to break up a fight, obviously. So that was the whole thing. But it was small. But, you know, at the time, we didn't feel it was small, if you know what I mean. It was just a lot of us, that we were all cosy and, you know, fighting for that, you know, that space beside my mother, because she was a hugger. Do you know what I mean? So she'd have her arms all around you, like, and that was it. So my dad had his seat and my mum had hers. Mine was usually the armchair when I was reading. And then, but we'd all like that little spot beside my mum was the best spot in the house, you know. And even when I was married and I had my own child going back there, that was the best spot. She'd still hug you, you know. And it was just, you had that, oh my God, I'm actually feeling a bit. But there's that huge sense of love and protection was there, you know.
So, in this two-bedroom, in that two-bedroom, were the six kids in the one bedroom?
Well, at the start we were. It was two double beds with three and three each. And we used to take turns, you know, for the spooning thing. I know that sounds nuts, but you would. You take turns, then you turn over. And but then as we all got a little bit older, because my brother, like, there was five girls and one boy. So because we were getting older, it was the boy. We had, I think for now it sounds ridiculous, we referred to the front of the block as the balconies. And then what you had at the back, we used to refer to as the veranda. So that sounds a bit nuts, because I worked in, when I worked somewhere, I actually was explaining to somebody that I dyed a pair of boots and I put them out into the veranda. And this girl's girl was from Fox Rock. And she said, Sadie, you have a veranda. Oh my God, you have a veranda. How fabulous. I said, Terry, do you actually know where I live? Do you know what I mean? Do you actually know where I live? And I just thought it was hilarious that this was the posh thing. But I have a funny feeling my parents did that for a joke, that it was the veranda, like that the back was the veranda, the front were the balconies. But that's what they always were to me. And so the veranda then was made into a bedroom for my brother. So they put glass just on the balcony, and then they closed that all off, and that was his bedroom, and then it was the girls. So it was two sets of bunk beds then, which were the new thing. So two sets of bunk beds. And I think one of my, yeah, actually two of my sisters shared the bottom bunk on one of the beds, but I had the top. So where the wardrobe was, the top of the wardrobe was my bedside locker. So if I was between boyfriends and feeling sorry for myself on Saturday night, my mum would cook, the meat was cooked on Saturday night. I think knew that was a thing of the past before fridges, but the meat was cooked, and then she'd come in with a lovely ham sandwich and a big mug of tea, and I'd be watching the black and white tearjerker on the little tiny TV that we had, and life was all, everything was okay in the world again. But it was just, that was it. But it was actually small, but it didn't really feel small. I know that sounds like, when I've moved into my house now and I'm trying to configure rooms so there's a bigger entertainment space, and go, will you actually cop on to yourself? Do you know what I mean? It's and we've actually cooked, because that kitchen as well, there was something that happened to my family, and I remember cooking in that kitchen. It was for 11 people. I still to this day don't know how that was done, but it was. And then if anyone came, my mum and dad were heavily involved in the Tenants Association, and my father was the secretary of it. So they would have, my father was head of the all of Ireland in that. So they were very community people. So there were always politicians, community activists in my home. So it was just, it's really an exciting home, except when you're watching Top of the Pops and somebody came in for a meeting and you're going, dear God. But my dad was there because we'd all watch Top of the Pops. It was the thing on Thursday. And he said, that's fine, but you need to watch Tomorrow's World beforehand, which is all very scientific and, you know, facts and figures and stuff. So then he sat with us, and what he used to do was he'd find out little bits of information and he'd say, oh yeah, I believe he was in such a band beforehand and he'd a hit and so, and we're going, oh my God. But he would actually be reading, because my father would be reading that stuff, he'd actually have read it, but he'd stored, you know, when you think back, he used to store the information, and it's like he knew everything. We're like, uh-huh, like, you know, that's, but we'd be there and just doing our faces up to go out on Thursday night, watching Top of the Pops. And God love, people used to come into our home, because there's five girls, can you imagine? And this guy used to come in from Cork, and he was in the Tennis Association down in Cork, and he worked for Faber-Castell, and he used to curse like a trooper. And which was unusual. My father, there's no bad language in my house. My father never let anyone. So my dad would say, it's just how they speak, you know, in court. It's just how they speak. Every second word, you know, is a curse and stuff. And we used to say, come on, Tom, come on, say something, you know. We used to love it. But he used to come to our house. And I'm sure, I don't know why he even did it, but Thursday seemed to his day. And we're all there, face powder, Top of the Pops on. And God love him. He was grand, and then a little meeting would carry on, and the little huddle that was there. It was, you know, it was just strange. But, like, it wasn't strange to us. That was our world, you know. And, like, sometimes I actually get sad when people say, oh, there's no amenities, there's no this. We actually didn't either. Do you know what I mean? Like, we were overcrowding. It would have been overcrowding. There's no two ways about it, but we were fine. But when Wimbledon was on at the time, we'd be out in the flats. There was three cars in the flats, and I think one of them was Antoinette's dad was actually one of them. So if it was a rainy day for the pictures, we'd all just be piled into that, and we'd just go down to see that. And but what we would do is we would just tie a rope between the railings of the bottom floor and to somebody's car door, and that was the whole of it. And we'd actually be calling out scores like you would. Wembley. And when the horse show was on, the Dublin horse show was on, we'd actually have show jumping. So we'd actually, there would be boxes, there would be little fences between the tree and the railings up there around the side, and there'd be fourfolds, five, whatever, and we'd all do it. It was like, that was it. It was just good fun. And we'd lit a new club, and I tried playing guitar that just didn't work. I always think I can just play a tune straight off and then I'm bored if I don't. But no, they were good. They actually were great times at the time, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose that, I think that's the thing, like, because so often when we speak about these times and people say they're great times, I suppose it's trying to understand what made them so great.
Well, to be perfectly honest, I know our flat changed. Like, the flat that I grew up in now is actually boarded up. And that really saddens me. Like, I drive past it and, you know, the first time I saw it, I went, oh my, and I was told about it. But seeing it is another thing. I think I could honestly say it's when drugs moved in. And I don't think at the time, I think it was left, it wasn't dealt with. I think perhaps if it was in another area, it may have been dealt with a lot quicker. But it just wasn't. And I even saw myself the deterioration in my own block. Because I know my father actually resuscitated somebody on the stairs, and his friends, so-called friends, just went off and left him. And this group of lads would have been giving, my parents were on the ground floor on the bottom, and they would have been giving my parents an awful time towards the end. You know, it was in a way to end your days, I suppose. So, but one night there was commotion outside, so my dad went out and he resuscitated this young lad, called the ambulance, and in fairness, he came back over to apologise for everything that they'd done. And Dad said, look, son, all I'd say to you is they're not good friends. They just left you there. And he said, they're not good friends. So he said, you should not be with them anymore. You know, I don't know what's going on or what's... And he said, well, in actual fact, he says, I'm leaving Dublin because I know myself, I can't stay here. So, and I just thought that was really awful, awful sad. Like, awful sad. So I could honestly tell you, I remember when I was coming home, when I was kind of early 20s, coming home, and you know, if there's anyone at the stairs, they'd be calling your name and you go. And then when I came in at temper, I just wanted to take someone on, and that's terrible. But I scratched that one. But I came in and I just went run, and I was just running up the stairs like a mad person. And I'm going, what am I doing? They're just deliberately taunting you. But it just changed, you know, and that, like, don't get me wrong, we had our fights, we had our rows, we had our arguments, you know, people in a strap hopping into the house and not talking to people, and, you know, physical fights by times, but it was never that. It was never that. And that's the big issue, you know.
And did your parents, were they there till the end? Is that where they
lived? My mother would never have left. Like, my father worked in Guinness's, so we could have bought a house three times over. Because when I look at it, up until the time, my mother would have had a Guinness pension, which wasn't fantastic. But she was still being charged, I think, 50 or 60 a week. So, and you were based on, your rent was based on who was working in the house. And all of us worked. Like, we all worked. And so you imagine six kids or five, whatever, when we started to move out. But we all actually worked, and my dad was working in Guinness. So if I think of it now, there would have been probably more than three houses they could have easily have bought over that time. But Mam absolutely loved it. Mead Street was on her doorstep. She knew people down there. The people on the tenants, she was in a women's club and the Tenants Association, and SICTA was another community group. So she was in all of those, and she'd only need to go down to Mead Street and meet someone, chat to someone in 5 minutes. So she loved it. So, I mean, everybody else kind of wanted at one point, said, no, we need to be moving now. You know what I mean? But no, that was it. So we joked if we won the lotto, she would just build an extension at the back. You know what I mean? So it was that kind of thing. So my mom would have been last woman standing there, but everybody else kind of wanted to move on, you know. But yeah, no, they were good. They were really, Like, I'm loving that it all fondly, to be honest with you. There were, you know, tough times there as well, but like, it was overall, it was a good experience. So seeing it boarded up now is just sad.
You know? And are your parents still with us?
No, they've died a few years ago. Okay. Yeah, which is, you know, so it's even now when I go past, I just think it's terrible. But they're lovely, like Antoinette's parents were friends as well. So it was always like, you know, I remember those washing machines broken, which is the end of the world. And you'd be, you know, walking one down from one flat to the other. So we'd all of that. So people just shared. And the sense of community was amazing. Like if somebody's parent had died, you knew your kids were just going to be taken in and fed and looked after. You didn't have to worry about that. You could just get on with whatever. And the people in the flats then did a collection. So a big, huge box of food, and usually because they knew people would be in and out of the house for sandwiches and stuff. So, and it's extra expense, and there wouldn't have been a lot of money. So it's an extra expense. So there would be a collection for a wreath, and it'd be a collection for just a box of groceries that you would have needed for people in and out of your house. And it would be just run up and tell Mrs. Whoever, we have such and such in here. And that's it. And it's fine. And to be honest, you would have known that. But we went to the stage, my parents, as we got older, my parents still love kids. So kids used to come into my parents on Saturday night, and they'd get crayons and books and stuff and things for them to fill in and games. And they were known as Mammy and Daddy Larkin. And if they walked down the street, smaller kids would actually call them that. But there was one kid that lived in the top balcony. He told dreadful lies. I actually won't tell his name. He lied all the time. But one time he came in and he was all upset, and he was there, and just in the daytime, just called in. I said, "Are you okay?" And he said, "Ah, no." He says, "My granny died." And says, "Oh, come on in here, love." And we go in. So he was in. He's been looked after and fed and getting biscuits and things. And then my mum met his mum, and she said, "I'm awful sorry to hear about your mother. I'll just say Johnny for now," told us all about. She says, "There's nothing even wrong with my mother." So then we just said, "If we just lined just to come in and just have an little natter and get fed and whatever," do you know what I mean? So that was it. But you could do that, go in and out of people's. And I used to tell ghost stories on the stairs, and I'd make them up, but I would never actually tell them as if it was a story. It was like something happened to my dad, or when we were up in the school, it was in the convent. We had to go over to the convent one day, and I'd make up this about Mary Aikenhead and her head rolling off down the stairs and stuff. And I would say, "I actually heard the thumping coming down the steps." And so I'd tell them as if it was something that happened. So, and we'd be on the steps, but when they'd all have to go, I lived on the bottom, so they all had to go up the steps. You'd hear, don't go in until I'm at my door. So you'd have to, "Are you there yet? Will you hurry up," or whatever, because it'd be freezing. It could be out in the winter. And then somebody complained to my parents about me telling the ghost stories. And then my dad told them, he said, "Oh, you go away, you should be paying her for entertaining your kids. Will you go off out of that?" So then he came to me and said, "You don't have to tell any more ghost stories." So I went out, but I'd be going out and they'd be sitting on the stairs and said, "Tell us the ghost stories." I said, "No, I actually get into trouble if I tell a ghost story." And they're saying, you have to. And then I had to eventually say it. I said, "If you tell your parents, I'm in such trouble." So that was it. So you always did stuff. Do you know, it was your imagination. It was, as I say, the tennis, the show jumping, you know, it was just that kind of thing. And we had pram sheds as well. And because I was always at my head in a book, like the pram sheds became our coal shed at one particular point. And then the fridge went where the coal shed was in the flat. But the pram shed's outside. So when I read so much, I actually wanted a pony for Christmas. And it says, "Where do you put a pony?" I said, "Just cut the pram shed in half. That's all you need to do. And then they can graze out the back in the gardens." And I was like, "Yeah, that's not going to happen." It would be cruel to have a horse, do you know what I mean? So, but as well, my dad had, it would be cruel to have a dog in the house as well. So we end up minding the neighbour's dog that was upstairs that used to live in ours. It was like our dog. And the dog knew us so much, she used to go over to my grandmother's who lived across the road and bang the door with her tail. So she'd open up because she'd always have polar mints in her pocket. The dog would go in. It was just, you know, now when you have your dog and everyone's out with the lead. I mean, dogs were just out and they just went wherever. And if they went somewhere, they'd be fed. Or, you know, it was just, it was all very open when I think of it now. But yeah, it was just, they were good times. They were good times. And I do think, but sometimes I walk around and I kind of see some people and the same all the older lot that would have been on the tenants, think they've all died off. Ending with Madge Fagan was probably the last of that group. And they were just this marvellous group of strong, feisty, funny women. And no matter what was going on in their lives, they always had a funny take on it. And it's, you're laughing in the street, chatting up to someone about a story, and you walk away and you go, that's actually tough. But this is how they told it. They owned their story and they told it in this amusing way. And I just think, you know, they were fabulous women. And they had a big, huge rent strike back in the early 70s. Maybe you should say this for social health. But there was a huge rent strike because there was a lot of unfairness at the time. And so the whole of the country, and led primarily by my father at the time, but the women in that whole thing, they were actually manning the picket lines. Then they went from that they'd have days over where they'd get one of the schools or the community centres, and they'd actually be collecting everybody's rent so that they weren't getting into difficulty at the end. And they kept immaculate books and everything was lodged in the bank. And then they were able to, when the rent strike was over, they were able to actually hand that all over. Like, it was just fabulous women. So my mum was getting like 6 kids off to school, you know, and she was sick even one time and she was still sitting on the picket line there, you know. And I just think that those women, we never ever get those. And Madge Fagan was another one. I know she's been practically immortalised, but she was another one on the committee as well. And they were great women. You know, I see sometimes some of the minutes from their meetings and I didn't realise that they've come about lately, and I'm looking at them in my father's absolutely beautiful handwriting, like immaculate handwriting. So I'm looking at my signature there and I go, oh, good. He'd be mortified. But he, this beautiful handwriting and articulate and all of that. And it's like somebody whose child was very sick in damp conditions couldn't afford to go to the doctor. And I'm going, oh, that's awful. And it's only when I'm looking back at a lot of the lives and a lot of people's lives that they made so much better, that he would have negotiated on their behalf with Dublin Corporation at the time. And they were just the best people. All their time was really spent giving back to the community and people less off. And my father's whole thing with us growing up was, you know, there's no one better than you. You're as good as anybody else, but by the same token, you know, better than anyone else. You know, and that's how we were brought up. So you can move very freely in circles. I don't have that big intimidation thing because I just always felt that way. And it was a surprise for me when I went out into the workplace and you hear people saying, oh, you never think you came from flats. And you go, I'm sorry, what are we supposed to be like? What are you actually expecting? And then I was at an interview. I was actually working in a place with people queuing to go for an interview. And I would chat to them just to put them at their ease before they go in. And you would just know they're really nice and should be actually lovely with customers or whatever. And the girl who was interviewing came out and said, what did you say the interview to me? And I said, there's a lovely girl there. And she said, oh, she's from flats. And I'm going, I said, I'm from flats. She said, no, well, not those. This was up in, I won't mention the air. This was up in such as, I said, she's a lovely girl. She would be perfect for the role. And she didn't get it, as it turned out. So there's that, you know. And in going to school as well, we did have some times with the nuns. The nuns used to actually say, stand up, whoever was in that. It was a raucous out in the yard. Stood up, stand up. And we'd stand up and just, oh, my nuns, the children from the flats. And you're going, all right, what? And it's you don't really, like, in your little community. And that's why sometimes I actually now work bringing companies and schools, Desh schools, together to try and link and connect them up. And driven by a few different things, but an article I read once probably sums it up, why are some kids on the TY work experience working in Google and they're speaking foreign centre? And you're going, well, why is that? Like, that's, it's connections. So we work with a group now that we try and connect companies and through particular schools, that there's mentoring, work experience, career advice, careers fairs, you know, all of that type of thing. Because when we were there, the nuns used to send us off to the local sewing factory. So we used to joke that they were on commission. But, you know, and that was, so now, because, and you sometimes try to say to the kids, don't move outside, there's a big world out there, move out. But it's only when I'm even looking at my own experience, and that is the prejudices outside, you know, and the misconceptions of what you're supposed to be like as a person. Do you know what I mean? So I was a bit it's only when you go into the world, you go, oh, hang on, are we different? Are we? Do you know what I mean? We're not really, but you think we are. So it was just an interesting take on it, looking at when you actually start to move out into the working world, you know, you go, you see us differently. We're actually grand. Do you know what I mean? And you can leave your bag out. I don't care. It doesn't even match my shoes. But you know, it was just funny, strange in that way. But it was good people, good solid people, and I'm very proud to have come from there. I really genuinely am. And like, even meeting a few people now, I just love to meet up with them. But I particularly like to meet up if there's any of the older community people from then, because they just, I don't think we'll ever get those kind of people ever back again, which is a huge loss, really, you know.
And Sidi, were you born in the flats? Is that...
No, I was actually born in Thomas Street. So I was over at Massey's funeral home.
That's it, sorry, yeah. You said that, yes. And yes, then you were, yeah. But you were then the first, you were the eldest child.
The eldest, yes. Yeah. So there would have been three of us going over there.
And how old were you when you moved in?
I think about five. Okay. It's either four or five I have in my head. And you're trying to remember back. I think it was four or five.
And then that was your family home.
Oh, all, I married from there. Do you know what I mean? And all of us actually, we didn't do that thing that you move out, go in a different place, because it always seemed like it was an insult to your family that you moved out before you were getting married out, if you get my drift. Like, it's a different world now, thank God, in a way. So we all married from there, all of us, you know, left there or... You know, so yeah, that was it.
Yeah, you stayed there until you were married.
Yes, and yes. I was 25. Yeah.
And where did you go when you moved out? Did you?
I was actually, because I didn't want to leave my mum. It's that terrible, isn't it? Because I used to be on community things as well. So we went over to the north side where my husband is from, and we were there, and I was going, nobody chats to you, no one says hello, or you go into the shop and you try and strike up conversation, and they're looking at you for three heads, and I'm going, this is terrible. So I used to pretend I had meetings and keep going back over and just sit in my mum's house. Just, it's terrible, I think, for now, but I did. And then we eventually, there was rats there in it, and I said, no, no. So luckily enough, a flat actually came up over the doctor's surgery in Pimlico. So I was able to move in there, but we were putting money together for a deposit. We would always move out, but I loved it. It was like, I love travel. So it was just every time I get a deposit together, we'd just go off somewhere nice. And so it was all that going on. But then eventually we bought a house up in Maryland and we stayed there for a while. And again, that was, my father grew up in Maryland. But that, you know, that kind of changed a wee bit as well. So then I just wanted to move out and we went to Walkinstown. And the minute I moved in there, I just loved it straight away. And no matter how much money I'd have or where the road were on, we've lovely neighbours, and that big sense of community is there as well. Really nice people, and I love it. But I still have a huge affection for the Liberties area, and I love to go down into it and don't go enough, if I'm being really honest. You end up finding to go to several funerals and stuff and the older neighbours. But it's like a lovely spot. But I feel, because I know Angela's been telling you fabulous things about the coconut. And I was saying that one of the Jack Roaches, and I just remember, I said, Anton, I remember going in one day and asking where the orange is from South Africa, and he ran me. So we were just, but they're all great little places to go in. And I know my aunt actually lives just off Meath Street, and all the people in the Roses, the good, solid people there will check and see if she's okay. And she's really loves being there, because she knows they kind of look out for her in a way. And that's all of them right up the stretch of the road. Like, just that. And there's more good people there than not. You know, there really is. But there is just that little bit of it. But again, it's drug-related. It's mainly drug-related. It all goes back to that, you know.
So, Sadie, if you think of a really special day that happened in the flats when you were growing up, could you describe to us what that day, what happened that day, and the details from it?
Oh my God, it's going to sound like the maddest thing. A really good day I remember, and it's daft, they had, because you think I was madly religious, which I'm not, but you think I was, but the day I remember, it was like a Corpus Christi, and they all had, the bunting was out, so it was all of the bunting from all the verandas, which was the back of the house. They actually went from the top of your little bar that was there, and they came all the way down to the railing. So it was all bunting, was all the way down through the flats, and then the all usually the women, all got together, and so the steps were scrubbed, everywhere was scrubbed. Mr. Burke, who lived there, he was a gardener, he was actually a gardener, so his little section was beautiful. So all our communion photos, confirmation photos, are actually in where he did it, so everyone to clamber over into that. So he, the garden was just pristine, and it was just that big sense. It was a beautiful day, and we all came around the back of the flats to have a mass said. But it was just looking back at the flats was just festooned in flags, and it was all just bright and lovely. And it's a really, I can't believe all the things we've said, that is something that just stuck in my head. But it was the preparation for it, and everyone getting together to prepare for that particular day, and how the place looked. It was just glorious, you know. But, you know, it seems like a daft memory now, because we've, you know, there was all the sorts of stuff to happen, but that was like the one that I thought, oh my God, that was just beautiful to see it, you know. I thought the flats looked great, you know, when I think of it now, like, but I, and I'm given the impression I'm actually a religious person, but it was just how it all felt. And it was a big honour, apparently, to have this outdoor mass in our flats. It seemed to be a huge honour, and everyone was so proud that it was here, you know. So it was the sense of the day, as opposed to anything else, and the preparation for it, and coming together to look after it, you know. So that was quite nice.
And Sadie, you said you got married out of the flats.
Yeah.
Could you talk to us about maybe perhaps when you brought your...
God,
your...
maybe I should have said that first. Oh my God, no, that's Jeannie Mack. I remember Jerry coming to the flats because my family would have been very strict.
Hello.
Here, there's one here. Oh, is that one? Yeah, no, I brought, see, I knew Jerry. Jerry was a good friend before he was anything else. So we were best of friends, and I didn't want to have a relationship because I'd be very stroppy. So I didn't want to go out with him because I said, I don't want to ruin this friendship. And then when he stopped going where I'd meet him normally in the clubs that we were in, and I actually started to miss him. So, but they knew him of old, and they kind of, I think, sort of wanted me to end up with him. And so when he arrived, I think they were happy enough it was him, because he was coming as a boyfriend as opposed to anything else. So they were happy enough with him. And my mom loved him, because my mom said, oh, I don't know what this means, but she said, you could live on the side of a mountain with Jerry. And so I always feel if we broke up, she would have blamed me, you know, definitely not him. He's the golden boy. But they just liked him anyway. And I kind of always hoped that I would have ended with him. But I remember him coming home one night, and we were out, on the sofa, just nothing major, and there, and my father came out in his pajamas and with the alarm clock to say what to point out the time, and I think Jerry should be leaving now. I was going, oh my God, I'm mortified, I'm absolutely mortified. And he did it through, so he left, and I go, God, oh my God. And if you know the usual, I've never been so embarrassed in my life. And you just go into the bed and say, I'm mortified. So, but he was grand. So we eventually did get married after about 4 years, I think. But always, it was a great old day, because we got married down in, have you ever been to Meath Street? Meath Street's a lovely street. Like, it's great buzz in Meath Street. And there's the big church. And on the right-hand side, as you're looking at it, there's a place called The Grotto. And that is the best place in the world. And that's no matter how busy Meath Street is, that is just the loveliest refuge. And like, to this day, if I'm in Meath Street, I need to have to always hop in there. And there's some prayers that are in there. When you go into that little grotto that's there, people have left little prayers for people. And it's someone in jail, someone on drugs, it's someone sick. And they are so sad. But like, it's lovely that they've this faith. But so you just sit down and it's peaceful, and there's the holy water, the little font, and you bless the stone of Lourdes and you kiss that, and it's the peace in it. It's just lovely. So I would have gone there with my mum, my grandmother, my aunt, and whatever kids was around that particular day. But I would probably be the most constant one there, because I loved it. So that was really nice. But that's when we got married in Meath Street, and all of our wedding photos are in that grotto. And then we went to the little Flower Hall, which is where they have the penny dinners now, across the road. So that's, I knew chefs at the time. So that's where we had our wedding. It was over there. So that was just lovely. So we kept it around, and we didn't have much money. So cars were costing a fortune, and a horse and carriage was, oh my God, it was a fraction of the price. So we got a horse and carriage. I said, that's grand, that'll do me fine. And I got walk down. Like, I'm literally 2 minutes up the road. So Mum says, we can't do that. So a horse and carriage came. But the reality of that, sitting in it, parading through Mead Street, and that was the most mortifying thing. And then there's a picture of our wedding day on the horse and carriage. And my dad's helping me out. He's in his finery. I'm in mine. And the horse is even done. And the guy who's riding the horse has a cap on him and a cigarette dangling out of his mouth. It's one of those photos that's the favourite photo of all time. So even the horse was dressed up, but the guy in the horse and carriage doesn't have no effect that. So that was, yeah, so Mead Street. But if you do go to there, it's just a lovely little spot that's there. It's just a little, I always see it a bit of an oasis, you know, off the beaten track when Mead Street is busy with shoppers and stuff. It's just that little spot. So nice.
Do you remember a wake ever being held in the flats, or what would be, yeah, kind of the rituals around if someone in the community had died?
I suppose as kids, we didn't. I mean, the first person I actually saw who had passed away was my grandmother, and that was by accident. I actually didn't know. I was walking into the room where she would be. So we wouldn't have seen it. I didn't. And it's not to say it didn't happen. I don't remember it. It was straight down to the funeral home, usually that one, Massey's in Thomas Street. And that would have been it. But as I say, for somebody had passed away, the whole thing was, the first thought was, make sure those kids are looked after and they don't have to worry about the kids. Make sure we do a collection for a wreath and then part of it for groceries. And that was always the main concern for me. So as a kid, because I'd be the one that would be going around with my mum collecting money or knocking on other doors ahead of her and stuff, you know.
And do you remember at all your mother helping out families within the flats? If yeah, someone wasn't doing as well, yeah, or if that... Could you describe and that to us?
A lot of it we didn't know until after she'd passed away. When she had died, somebody actually came up to one of my sisters and said, I would have been lost without your mum. So my mum and dad would be very discreet. I know they helped lots and lots of people, because my father said, you just need a roof over your head and food. She didn't want anything else. So I know they did help out an awful lot of people. But it was very discreetly done. It was incredibly discreetly done. But there was always the things, if you had food over, another plate was done, such and such a body's living out up on their own, bring that up to Mrs. That and bring that over to there. If my mother made apple tarts, it'd be for the world and its mother. And when we were young, my aunt used to actually do these sale of works down in Mead Street. And it was for hampers for elderly people at Christmas time. So, and on Christmas Day, there was one hamper yet to go. And my dad had said to me, Sadie, will you just bring that over to a woman, I won't mention names, but she, across the road, she's just on her own there. And I'm going, oh, we're having such fun in the house, you know what I mean? And we're all here and the telly's on. So I said, begrudgingly, teenager, I kind of skulked across and I brought the hamper over with me. And I was kind of glad I went afterwards, because she was sitting there on her own listening to, oh, she was listening to the radio, and it was the soldiers writing from home back here. And I said, that's what she's doing on Christmas Day on her own. That's like, I just don't think it's a sin, you know, like somebody. So I stayed a little longer. I probably could have stayed a lot longer, but I was glad I went after, you know. So when I came home then, it was just, you know, just sit for a minute a bit in your head and go, oh, we're so lucky, you know, and you don't, you took it for granted. I was just, this is our Christmas Day. But not everybody was having that. So they kind of wanted us to have a sense of people who are less well off or who need somebody just even to talk to. And yeah, no, my parents were really, oh God, they were so kind and so generous, but they were. But it was after my mum had passed away that lady said, if it hadn't been for your mum, we wouldn't have eaten a lot of days and we wouldn't have had anything, or even for that kind word that she had. She said, I'd have been absolutely lost. And that was when we kind of knew. And I would have known there were probably others like that as well, because we were always marched up with dinners and things and whatever, you know. But like that was just it. We just, you did it. And I think a lot of people did in that time. But we were brought up with a sense of community, looking out for people, you know. I'm not perfect, but I do try my best, you know. But they were fabulous. They were fabulous people. We were very lucky with our neighbours as well and our friends, and you know, it was different times though, you know.
And I know your mum was really active and busy, yeah, with all her groups, But did she have a paid position? Did she work outside of the home?
No. And do you know a woman that should have, really? Because she was... God, I'm actually making her this wonderfully perfect person. But my father was incredibly intelligent, incredibly bright. And he'd gotten scholarships to go to university. He was... I think he had to leave school. You know, the usual, got a job in it at the time. But the Christian Brothers had begged... gone up to plead to let him stay, that he was already class ahead and they could push him really quickly through to go on and do his leaving or whatever it was the equivalent at the time. But that didn't happen. And then he had TB, and then he had TB then, and then I think he was then doing accountancy, and he was going, there was a load of different things. He was going to get a scholarship, but because of TB, it was in the States, he couldn't take up on it. So he was always very bright and intelligent, but my mother was as well. Like, and we didn't find out until I think Bran was talking that she got a summer job in Easton's when she was younger, and she wanted to stay. And Gran went up to the school to say, "Look, she wants to stay there. What do you think?" And they said, "Well, you know, just to say she had just completed an exam and she was the first in Ireland." And you're going, "We never knew that." Do you know what I mean? That wouldn't have been my mum. And so she was a very quiet person. But my grandfather was a carpenter, her dad, and said it's an awful pity she wasn't a boy because she was so good at carpentry, you know, and you go, it was different times, you know, but she worked in a sewing factory before, then she worked in Donnelly's. But no matter what, she could turn a hand to anything. And she had a small summer job in John Sweeney's, which is a clothes shop down in Meath Street. And my mum had a really good eye for clothes. Like, she didn't look after herself. Everything went back to us. But she could go out and buy me something and I would know I'd like it. I'd never doubt whatever. So she had a good eye and she was really good at it, you know. But, you know, then you're doing the home and the house and stuff. And I was probably being a wagon too. I was probably saying, I have to do the shopping and nobody else has to. But, you know, I was probably being dreadful in hindsight. I didn't make it easier. But I think herself, she just went, I don't know if that's not for me either, you know. But I think she as a person could have done absolutely anything. And she was quiet, but she was really strong and stubborn. And do you know what I mean? She was just these two people in one. But like anyone who met my mother would have said she's just the loveliest woman, like the loveliest woman. And people would turn to her, you know, and there'd be somebody in her house and you'd know just to go out, you know, and that was it. She was just... yeah, she was just a wonderful person. And she could have done anything. Just different times, you know, but she really could have.
And where did your mother grow up?
She grew up... God, Mam was up in... oh, just off Inchicore, Mount Brown, just off Inchicore. And then my grandfather didn't have a job, so she had different lives. But they really tough, tough, tough times. Really tough times. And that's her whole thing, that everyone is fed. You know, she had a big thing. She would be a feeder, but I now know where she was coming from. Yes, so that's... she would have had a tough life, you know. And you didn't really hear much of it. My grandmother, her mother, was in a wheelchair and she was blind. And she was the best character in the world. And she was another one. I'd say, well, I will you down to Stephen's Green. She said, no, I want to go to Meath Street. Because everyone in Meath Street would stop her. And everyone at Meath Street would want her to pray for them. And you're going... it'd take you about 2 hours to get through Meath Street. And I'm going, oh my God, one more person asked her to pray for them, I swear to God. But she, that was her. Like, and then we go back and she said, you know that second woman we met? And I said, oh, Mrs. Such and Such, it was her son, wasn't it? Yeah, okay. And then the rosary beads would be out. So she'd be straight on the case, do you know what I mean, when she get back home. But she was such good fun. But she used to say, when they talk about the tenements and the old tenements and people were in and out, she said it was horrible and don't let anyone tell you different, you know. And people were in and out of your place and your business, and she said they were awful times. So when she used to hear people romantically going on about tenement buildings, she'd actually put you right straight off and say it wasn't that. And she loved young people. And like, I'd bring her down and say, do you want to go to the old folks thing, you're having a party on? She said, I'd be full of old people. I go, you know, but that was her. She's just full of life. She's a great character altogether. Great character, you know. So that's about it. I can't think of anything else. I'm sorry.
No, I think, again...
thanks for the prompts, because I'm going, no, la, 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 la. I don't know what
you,
to say.
Thank you. I just, yeah. Again, this is for this Festival of Social Housing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, I think Ireland is in a place that we...